All right, that might do. I'm not sure I can take too much more of that from Marucci Barambo.
It gets better. It gets worse.
93 AFL Grand Final. A little bit of Advanced Australia Fair from Marucci. She's a bit off tone with the music and timing with the music as well. Maybe the earpiece wasn't working, but that's a setback for Marucci fans in the 1993 AFL Grand Final. I can tell you on that day, Adam, as we welcome our special guest, Brad Johnson was dominating proceedings in the morning that day at the MCG for the Western Jets in the under-18 Grand Final. And he joins us on the Breakfast Club on a Thursday morning. Do you remember that, Jono? Good morning.
Good morning, Half. Good morning, Whitey. No, I don't remember. That was my first ever Grand Final live being at. So the last thing I was concerned about was the national anthem, to be honest. I was just waiting for the game to get underway, Half, and I was probably still drowning the sorrows after your Northern Knights, and you were there as well, Half. Your Northern Knights absolutely destroyed us at 9 a.m. that morning when we kicked the dew off before the reserves run out. And look, it was a massive day. It was a great honour, obviously, to play our Grand Final day at the MCG, but it wasn't fond memories with what your team did to us. And especially Chrissy Johnson, I reckon it was, kicked 7 or 8 that day, maybe in a half of football, and dominated us. So, and you dominated as well, Half. Don't worry about that.
No, I didn't get too many kicks. I think I might have kicked a couple, but we did dominate the day. 32 goals to 18, Whitey. It was a 50-goal grand final.
Was that the day Shannon Gibson kicked a lot of goals at full forward?
Shannon Gibson kicked 10?
Yes,
10.
He did.
Oh, there you go. He did kick a lot of goals.
He had a day out. We kicked not a bad score, 18 goals, 12 or whatever we kicked, but it just wasn't good enough, Half, to match your 32 on the day.
Yeah, it was a big day. It was a big day. That went bright and early start. Get up at 5 to play a game of footy in a grand final. It's an odd thing to do. But we did it. It was a good day, a good experience. Your experience is a bit different to mine. You stuck around. I sold my ticket for $1,200 and went and celebrated.
That's fair enough. I think if we had a won, we might have done the same thing. But we were all a bit flat, so we just hung around and I just, you know, being the footy nut I am, Half, I couldn't leave, mate. I just had to stay and watch the Bombers and the Blues go into battle.
Yes, first grand final I was always a cool thing, no doubt about that. But yeah, no, my experience was a bit different that day, and I don't remember Marucci's work, and probably for good reason. Hey, John, how have you seen the festival of footy so far? You've been doing a bit of work with Fox and doing some great job with the commentary throughout the festival. But how have you seen the format of it, how it's sort of working, and from a calendar perspective, but the quality of footy we're seeing at the moment?
I think the calendar of it, I think, is working really well. I think the clubs have really sort of, you know, dug into it and accepted it and are now playing some pretty positive footy on the back of it. The scores last week were really good, a bit more free-flowing in the way that we're playing our footy. We talked earlier in the year about the scoring and aspects of that. And the winning teams are starting to get up around 90-plus points, which is really, I think, positive in terms of where the game's at, the style of footy. The good teams are really battling hard against each other. The West Coast Geelong game last week was one of the best of the year so far. So that was obviously really exciting. I think the way Richmond played last night, or a couple of nights ago now, sorry, on Tuesday was unbelievable against the Brisbane Lions, and they really put them to the sword. And I did the game last night, Geelong versus North Melbourne. Now, there were some patches, and I know, Whitey, you've discussed the fact that no one scored for quite a bit in that second quarter. But outside of that, the Cats looked in total control and played with some really good freedom. And I know you're speaking with Zach Tuohy a bit later on, but his change of role has really helped the Cats with their ball movement, especially forward of centre. He's linking up extremely well, and he's been really impressive in terms of the way that he's been able to change his role completely to help his own game, but help the team's game going forward. So the Cats were you know, a couple of levels above what North Melbourne could produce last night, who were really slow and really stagnant at times with their ball movement. They made some really basic errors, which the Cats absolutely capitalised on. And I just saw the second half of Adelaide and Melbourne last night when I got home. And that's when Melbourne just sort of really took control around the ball, and Clayton Oliver played a really solid game of footy. But for me, Melbourne, the test wasn't last night against the Adelaide Crows. It probably is next week when they play North Melbourne. Then they lead into Collingwood the week after. So for Melbourne, it really is around the next 2 weeks. They've got the 4 points. They lock those away. You can't take them off them. Well done to the Ds. But the next week against North Melbourne, which is more of an even contest for them as a footy club, leading into Collingwood, which is a step up, will really show us if Melbourne will improve in the second part of this season.
John, I want to focus on Geelong for a moment and talk about the positives of what took place last night. Because even though the Cats didn't have a great time of it over in Perth, they're okay, but that game against West Coast, I guess, was the big test for them. Just what Chris Scotty's able to do in being able to blend the new in with the old, and he's either doing it at selection or even within games. And last night we saw Patrick Dangerfield spend most of the time deep forward. Selwood's missed, obviously Ablett's missed for a variety of different reasons. But it's not just Guthrie and Menegola getting plenty of the footy, but we saw Fogarty last night. We're seeing close play in the forward line. Even Zach Tui last night have a meaningful role. He's doing very well, Chris Scott, in blending the new in with the old to create a very deep list.
Yeah, he is. It's quite impressive the way that they've been able to do that. And I think they learned a fair bit from last year as well, Whitey, where they dominated the first half of the year and then they tried to mix things up come the second half. And it sort of fell away a little bit with their momentum and those aspects of the way that they played, which probably hurt them leading into a final series. So, Cam Guthrie's gone to another level as a midfielder. He's really confident at the moment. He's doing well around the clearances for the Cats. Had another six last night, so his averages have gone through the roof to go with his 29 disposals. Sam Menegola's back to his very best as well. He's a consistent player now. We said last night that Chris Scott, would know exactly what he gets from Menegola week in, week out. So, that's coming off a year last year which fluctuated a little bit for Sam, so he's got himself super fit again, which he naturally is anyway, and he's just getting contest to contest. But then you mentioned the young guys, and you're right with that. Fogarty was very good last night. He had 23 disposals, 4 clearances, but he got more time in and around the stoppages, which is what he thrived on as a junior. So he got those opportunities, and he really made the most of those opportunities. Selwood only had 14 last night on return, so he'll be better for that. Zach Guthrie kicked 2 goals, had only 11 disposals, but he had some real impact on the game with a couple of things that he did. He got lucky with his first ever goal in AFL footy, which was a reverse tour from outside 50 that found its way through the middle. Well, we weren't sure how that happened, but he did well. And Brian Myers just, bobs up again with 4 goals and looked pretty sharp inside forward 50. And look, Close and Atkins didn't have a lot of the ball, only 6 and 7 disposals between them. But when you were just watching the game, they were always up in the face of the opposition, making it difficult for North Melbourne to exit D50. Brad Close with that rundown tackle on Pittard late in the game as well just showed that these guys are staying mentally attuned for 4 quarters and wanting to do the best to stay within the lineup. And Brad Close, he did the right things, and he did the right things late, which will certainly stay in the focus of Chris Scott and the way that he would like him to play. Yeah, those guys would like a little bit more ball in their hands and probably hit the scoreboard as forwards as well. But, that's where the rotation comes in now over the next couple of weeks for the Cats, and they'll continue to rotate their players, and we might see some young players jump in as well. I'm looking forward to seeing Nathan Kruger maybe getting a bit of a run for the Cats at some point, whether that's Tom Hawkins having a rest. And this guy's got some good energy about him. He's tall and skinny, but he can certainly play. So look out for him in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, okay. There's a name for us to keep an eye on. What about the Kangaroos? John, what are you seeing from the Kangaroos? A lot of fans out there would have been hoping that the appointment of Rhys Shaw and the energy they brought into the season with the way they finished last season and some of the talent coming through might have been a more positive response from the Kangaroos. What are you seeing in terms of their game style and the talent they've got on the park at the moment?
Well, the talent's there. When you look at and I know we're only going on the names at the moment, but they've got some good talent through the midfield. And at times it looked quite good if Madjak got over the top in the ruck or Goldstein, and you got it down to Anderson or Simpkin and Higgins through the middle of the ground consistently. And Dumont's not a bad player also, but they're really sort of slow, I think, with their ball movement, especially off half back. And every time they took a mark when they got the ball outside D50, they weren't in a position to turn and just roll and get going with the ball. They always went back behind the mark. And when you play the Cats and you go back behind the mark, they just set up the ground too quickly. And it made it difficult for North Melbourne to get the ball back inside and get any fluency in the way that they wanted to play their footy. So when they did try it, they made some fundamental errors in the first quarter. Bad handball resulted in a goal to the Cats. And then I think it was a Higgins kick back into Goldstein where he dropped a simple mark, which the Cats just pounced on. And I think Myers kicked you know, his second for the quarter. So it was those little errors from some senior players which did hurt them in that first quarter. But outside of that, they've just got no run and drive in terms of, you know, taking the game on a little bit more. And I think North Melbourne's a team that really likes to do that. When they did get the ball in quite quickly and did come to ground, they looked semi-dangerous at ground level inside forward 50. Marnie kicked an early goal because of that. Bailey Scott's quite lively in terms of the way that he plays as a half forward, getting up the ground and coming back in. But across the board, they just didn't get enough from enough players last night to even be in the contest. Zerha only finished with 9, no goals. Marnie is the forward, 8, 1 goals. Aidan Bonner only had 5. And then the injury to Ben Brown, which really hurt them, I think, last night in that first quarter where he's hurt his knee. So a lot of work to do for North Melbourne over the next couple of weeks. And like we said, they play Melbourne next week. So it's a big test for both footy clubs.
The Ben Brown situation is interesting, Whitey, that he's clearly had that knee strap for a little while. We know Ram has mentioned before that he's battling a little ailment for the season. It didn't seem too much last night, the incident where he did get it twisted a little bit, I think, from what I could see through the vision. Johnny, you were there watching it as well. It's a big blow for him because he's dropped last week in a game that he probably could have got some confidence in against the Adelaide Crows where they dominated proceedings. And he comes back and plays against a really good towering defence and good covering defence when the high balls come in like the Cats. In fact, not too many better in the competition. Then he gets injured. He's out of contract. I imagine that the mind space of Ben Brown would be just about all over the shop at the moment, wouldn't it?
It's all conspiring against him. Yeah, I was going to say, Jono, it's all conspiring against him at the moment for a guy that's out of contract and, you know, his last contract and even the one that he thought he was probably going to get this year was going to be hugely significant, particularly at a club like North Melbourne where there's not a lot of stars to pay big money for, so he becomes one of those players. And being a tall key forward, there's going to, regardless of his form this year, there is going to be a demand for him that might see him move, because I'm just getting the suspicion that people are going to love him a bit more outside North Melbourne than at North Melbourne at the moment, based on what we're seeing currently.
Yeah, I think he's. I think we were talking last night. He's very much, as we know, he's a straight lead at the kicker type of player, and with no space really around at the moment, he may need to have to adjust the way that he is playing. Even when he did hurt his knee last night, he led at the ball and then came back front and square. Where with the size of the guy and the way that things are going at the moment, with all the key forwards having to sort of crash the packs as they do when you look across the competition, even the young King boys. You know, they play that role before, you know, leading at the footy when they get those opportunities, when the space opens up as the game opens up. But he just came back onto it and half it looked like he did well. He got that front and centre. But when he did get tackled, it was like his boot just gripped into the ground a little bit and then caused the twist on the knee in the Blixar's tackle. So it was a bit unfortunate. But I think going forward now, he'll have a good chance, obviously, to reassess. And we might have to see a bit of a change in style in the way that Ben Brown potentially goes about his footy, especially with how crowded forward lines are these days on slow play. You got absolutely no chance of hitting one up on the lead. You look at Tom Hawkins, he just positions himself in the forward pocket, gets some one-on-one battles, but when he needs to, the ball comes to ground consistently for the Cats, and then they try and go to work at that point, and Ben Brown might have to start providing that more often for North Melbourne.
So to both of you, is it a situation now with Ben, you talked about, Jono, how he's got to potentially change his style. Or is it a situation where he's got to go to a club that suits his style? Because it seems that since Rhys Shaw has come on board, they're playing differently. And I know he had some success under Rhys Shaw late last year, but in general, the way that Rhys Shaw sets up his team, I don't see that that's going to suit Ben. And maybe he's better to go to a club that suits him rather than him having to change, particularly at this point in his career.
I think the way that you're spot on, Whitey, with the end of last year, because when he just wasn't having that impact at the start of last year, North Melbourne made the change with coach, and Rhys Shaw just let that freedom go in the way that North Melbourne played their football. And Ben Brown needs speed in the game because he needs an open forward line as often as possible to go to work and allow his top level qualities to come into play. And that's what he got at the end of last year under Rhys Shaw, because it was sort of like, okay, I'm taking over, boys. Let's just go enjoy the remainder of the year and then we'll work on aspects of the way we really want to play over the summer. Now he's had a summer with them, and now, you know, half a year with them, Reece Shaw, and I know it's been a little bit of a challenge this year in particular, but they're not playing with that same freedom we saw at the end of last year with, you know, that direct drive and play on football through the middle of the ground. And I can't remember the last time I saw Sean Attlee get that handball receive and burst, you know, this year, where end of last year he was going and allowed others within the game to really get moving. But now it's really more slow and composed and behind the mark. And Ben Brown's got no chance, unfortunately, as a forward, because the opposition just fall back on you. And it's just affected the way that he is as a player. So he needs speed in his game, in the game. So that becomes a big decision for him potentially in the next couple of years. North Melbourne, can they create that with the growth and experience and game style under Reece Shaw? And he's got to make that decision. Or he try and find somewhere that plays reasonably quick footy that will suit his style so that he can have an impact in the competition.
There's a good pick up off the SMS about Ben Cunnington. We're talking maybe early in the week, Whitey, can't quite remember, about players who are the most valuable players in the competition to their teams. And Nat Nui is obviously one of those that stands out from a West Coast perspective. But Ben Cunnington might just be that player for the Kangaroos that without him, they seem to have to work really hard around the contest, because normally it's just something that's a given, that he's the guy there that gets the job done in those circumstances. Then you can start to expand a bit from there and plan to expand a bit, Jono, rather than hope a bit more often.
That's a really good point. Really good point, Harf. And I think Zeeble's the other one they're missing, of course, as well. So they're two big bodies that have been the staples for North Melbourne for quite some time. And I think last night, you know, they kicked a couple in a row, North Melbourne, and then Dangerfield went into the midfield late and got an unbelievable clearance to get him. We're saying then that it was always going one way, and that was to Patrick Dangerfield, that last clearance. And Pollock and I forget who else was in there, just couldn't get the job done to stop Dangerfield. And I suppose it comes back to that Cunnington point, who would have identified, okay, Danger hasn't been in all night. We've kicked a couple in a row. Here he comes to have an impact. The ball's going to one player only at that centre bounce.
Yeah.
And he would have probably done something about it, more so than what the guys in there could last night. So it's a really good point in terms of what Ben Cunnington does bring to that side in terms of experience, smarts around stoppages, around centre bounce to set them up even defensively to stop the opposition.
I brought a talking point here. I was listening to John Walsfold yesterday talking about Joe Danaher. I want to play you what he said, and at some stage through the morning, it might take you a little while, so don't be afraid to email me later on. Can you tell me what this means?
John, will Joe Danaher play this year?
That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that because there's so many things that you have to take into account in that regard. So someone asked me weeks ago if I could guarantee it. Well, you know, I don't know. Can you guarantee we'll find a vaccine for COVID-19? I'm not sure. Al's laughing at me. But there's no guarantees in life. We're working really hard with Joey. We're excited about the way he's moving. We were really disappointed when he got that little calf strain, but he's starting to come through that, and he'll be joining in more full training this week, which we're, you know, really pleased to see.
So really excited. He's getting into full training, like a COVID cure as well on the way. What's going on at the Bombers with Joe Danaher?
I'm not too sure. Trying to put it all together there that he's some chance with no chance of playing in 2020. So I think through the next 3 weeks, Joe Danaher is no chance of playing, and that's because of the shortened game, shortened breaks, and if it's just the calf that he's getting over now, then that's a positive for Joe, because you can get through that, but they will have to take their time again, because a reoccurrence would be a mini disaster for them. So he's had so much time away from the game already, Joe, that John's probably right in the way that he's saying, you know, we don't know, because it's been so long and he's had so many hiccups along the way that if he gets through, I think he's sort of leaning to the points that it could be just a bonus for the Bombers. I think in their thinking there, they could be going, well, you know what, if he doesn't get up for us, then he hasn't for the last, you know, over 12 months anyway. So we've just got to be patient with the way that he's coming through.
I think half everybody wants, particularly Essendon fans, want to have some sort of indication of what they're thinking with Joe. And I just don't think Essendon knows. Because every time they push up the training, he either starts to get a sore groin, or in the case of last time, he gets a calf issue. I think probably the best case scenario for Essendon fans, just sort of reading between the lines a little bit, is that if they can get their season to a point that they're 50-50 with four games to go, he might be the icing on the cake that can get them to push to potentially play finals. And he's shown previously, off a long break, he can come back and have an immediate impact. He's that sort of player. They've just got to try and get as much volume into him as possible, hope that he doesn't break down, and then just put him out there and see what's possible, Jono, before the end of the season.
Yeah, I think listening before he did do his calf, John Worsfold was talking about that he was doing probably up to, you know, between 5 and 8 kilometres per training session in terms of volume. So he was starting to get up to those levels in each session that are required to then push forward towards playing AFL footy again. So he actually wasn't getting too far. He wasn't too far away when John was talking about that earlier in the year in an interview that I watched. But he just has the hiccups, which then push you back. So now he's got to get back to those levels of running quite big loads in training sessions before he even looks like getting out there consistently again. And that's why it is still a bit of the unknown, I think, with whether he will get those opportunities towards the end of the year.
And I think half the other interesting piece of information that came out of Essendon yesterday was that Connor McKenna didn't play last week because of homesickness. Because I think a lot of people were really scratching their heads to work out why he would be managed, considering he played quite well against Adelaide, hadn't played a lot of footy, and that he was being managed again. And he played in a scratch match over the course of the weekend as well. So John Worsfold came clean and said, yeah, look, he's battling a little bit with homesickness and maybe he'll be back next week, because he's so important to Essendon. He's so important to them. So, yeah, they need to have him out there.
Keen to talk to Dylan a bit more about that after 8 o'clock. And yes. I don't know how much you'll give us, but it does seem to contradict itself a little bit, Jono. He's homesick, so he can't play in the AFL, but he'll play in the scratch match. Like, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
It is a little bit, but you know what, half he might have been feeling pretty ordinary, and we don't know what's really going on. And then he's woken up and thought, well, I'm out of the team, but I'm feeling pretty good today. Let me go have a run around for a little bit and blow some steam off. So, you know, there could be reasons behind all of it. And look, against, I think it was the Crows, like, he produced a solo in the middle of the ground, you know, running through, kicking to himself. And we love those highlights from Connor McKenna. So hopefully, you know, we get to see a bit more of it. He gets himself right, and the Bombers will be really patient with it throughout the next few weeks.
And we saw Tuesday night, Jono, just going back a couple of days, Tuesday night we saw the Tigers do their thing against the Brisbane Lions. Was that the biggest scare the competition's seen this year from the red and the yellow and black?
Yeah, how good was it? They got themselves going. It was like they really set themselves for it. And, you know, you rarely see, you know, they were quite, I suppose, more physical than we've seen in some time as well, the Richmond Footy Club. And it was like Damien Hardwick had just, you know, twisted the knob a little bit in terms of, you know, preparing them mentally for this clash against the Brisbane Lions, to show them, hey, that show the competition that how serious they will be again this year, the Tigers. And we all know they will, but they just took it to an absolute new level. So it's back on Brisbane now, isn't it? It really is, in terms of where they're at as a footy club. They're an exciting team to watch, and they just haven't been able to beat probably the best team in the modern time in Richmond at all, who have got control of them. So it's now back on the Brisbane Lions to say, okay, where are we at, and how are we going to be able to beat the top couple of teams in the competition come finals this year?
Well, it's a great challenge for Brisbane, still emerging, but certainly the heavyweights told them to get back in the box on Tuesday night in the Tigers. Let's have a look at tonight's games, boys. Let's go through a bit of a Thursday night footy preview. And we've got two again tonight, Jono, which you can catch, of course, on your network, Fox Footy, where you are the main star of the whole thing. Collingwood-Sydney is the first one. It's another 5:40. It caught me out last night, I must admit, the 5:40 kickoff. It caught me out, Jono. I came into the competition a bit late. Caught a time, I got my tip in for Geelong and North. So I've got four changes for both teams. Reid Brown of the Callum variety, Roughhead, and Rusko come in for Stevens Thurlow, sorry, for Maine, Cameron, Keane, and Varko. And for the Swans, Stephen Sturlow, Melican and Sam Wicks come in. Now, for Lewis Taylor, Nick Blakey has been omitted. Ryan Clark and Sam Gray. So a lot of recruits there for the Swans in recent years getting the chop there. Have you seen, just before we get in the game, have you seen the video of Trey Rusko ringing mum Fiona?
No, I haven't seen it yet. Jono. I'll have to have a look at that one.
Fiona is one of the great mums on the planet. She is hilarious. She drops a line, which I think if you'd said it on the field and the umpire Mike picked it up, you'd probably get reported for it, for sledging. It's one of the great sledges of all time. I won't ruin it, but if you haven't seen Fiona Rusko's conversation with son Trey as he rings to tell her he's making his debut, Collingwood socials have got it everywhere. You'll love it. It is fantastic.
Oh, I will. I'll check it out because I love Lachlan Hosey when he rang his mum and she was watching the Kardashians. So that was about a good week. Mum's dropping some information that they probably wouldn't want out there.
Very funny. It is very funny. It was very good from Fiona. So tonight's game, we've got Collingwood and Sydney. Collingwood obviously had a horrible time in the West, Jono. On field and off court, on court, over there with the Magpies. You've got the Sydney Swans who, well, 2 weeks ago they were pretty good. Last week they were pretty poor again. And with four changes, there's no doubt that John Longmire's trying to make a statement there, as well as manage his players, I think. But where do you see this game being won tonight with Collingwood and Sydney?
Oh, this is the game Collingwood needs to just to reset their season, get 4 points, get some confidence back, and away they go. They'll beat the Sydney Swans, and they should do it quite comfortably, I would have thought as well, half. So Collingwood fans should be, you know, pretty excited to sit back, watch their team really dominate tonight. If they're in the right mind space, they will. And it's just one of those games where they can, where they'll be looking, as I said, get those 4 points, get them in the bag, and then move on with some confidence into the next 2 weeks while we've got shortened games, half. So this should be clearly Collingwood's game tonight.
So they've won 3 games at Sydney. Collingwood, we know, have had a couple of losses and are clearly one of the better teams in the competition, but they're still sitting outside the eight at the moment. They've got 2 games up their sleeve in the next couple of weeks where they should win pretty well and get themselves back in some confidence, as you rightly say. So I'm not too concerned about the Magpies, but with the Swans, Whitey and I were quite bullish about what the Swans have done in terms of, you go back to that conversation about Geelong before, about integrating young talent through the last couple of years almost seamlessly and without people knowing. They're a really energetic young group with some really good talent, but they just haven't found a way to get any flow in their game this year, John. Is that more system than personnel, do you think?
Oh, I think so. I think their defence has been under the pump for the entire year, half, so it makes it a little bit more difficult. You really feel for Dane Rampey, and he's trying to hold up the fort down back, and he's got a busted hand now, and you know, so aspects of that. But I think Ollie Florin has gone to another level this year, which has been good for his game and where he wants to go. Callum Mills has become really consistent across half back, and he's got some talent. Now they talk about whether the Callum Mills should play in the midfield more often. I think he's settled as a half back, interceptor, got courage, can use the ball well. Coming out as well. James Rowbottom's another one that's for Sydney Swans that has gone to another level in terms of the way that he's playing his footy. But we're still excited about Tom McCartan and what he'll be able to produce throughout his career. And Blakey as well, who has been managed or dropped for this game. But so they have got a good mix of young talent, the Sydney Swans. It's just trying to collectively give them enough games this year so that in the next year or two, they can really start to climb back up and have an impact in the comp again, especially if they get Buddy back too at some point, which would be nice for them.
I think half the interesting thing, and I'm inclined to agree with Jono that this is the game that Collingwood needs to get their confidence back into their game. But the reality is with Collingwood, as we talked about earlier in the week, they have lost 4 of their last 6 games. And in that time, Jono, they haven't kicked 10 goals in a game in any of those 6 games. So if it becomes a grind, then Sydney's going to be in it because that's the way that they play. And, you know, Taylor Adams said to us yesterday, oh, we've got to get better in the contest. That's the key performance indicator for us to know whether we're playing good footy. And I'm not saying I disagree with that, but I think one of their problems at the moment is that they need to score higher. And that's a simple thing to say in a lot of ways, but they're keeping the opposition in the game because they're not hitting the scoreboard, which is what they had done in previous years. And I think that was illustrative with the game against Fremantle, that they just kept Fremantle in the game because they couldn't put them away when they had control early in the match.
Really good point, Whitey, and that's where Fremantle got their tail up late and were able to take away the game. As long as if they're not getting enough ball going forward of centre,
no,
because the midfielders are getting enough ball in there for them. It's just that they're mid-sized to small forwards who, in round one, I sat there against the Bulldogs going, wow, how powerful is this? Aren't able to get any consistency or any flow in their game whatsoever. None of them are hitting the scoreboard consistently. And you might have one stand up, but as a collective group, they're not getting the job done as a forward six at the moment, or seven if you add the rotation that goes through there, through the amount of ball that they are getting. And yeah, they've got some younger players in there. Yes, I know they've got some players that aren't playing as well, that are stars of the competition, which does affect the way that the Pies do play their footy at times. But you can't tell me they haven't got enough talent across the board with a couple of their stars out that they cannot get across the line against the Fremantle last week or the Sydney Swans tonight. It's just a game they just have to win, and they need to get more work out of guys like Phillips. Like Sear had an opportunity, Sire had an opportunity last week and just couldn't get enough ball or show enough to say, hey, I deserve to stay in the lineup, gets another opportunity. And across their forward line, Josh Thomas just hasn't done enough so far, and Jamie Elliott. And it's lucky they've got Darcy Moore down back at the moment, who just stops pretty much everything that the opposition are trying to throw at them at the moment. Maynard's having a good season as well, but collectively, it's not the individuals that need to play well; it's the whole team that need to bring it, and they need to get something out of everyone tonight to start building what they can hopefully produce come some finals footy for the Pies this year.
Well, that's what the Saints are doing really well, Jono, playing as a team. They've got the Gold Coast Suns tonight, the second game tonight at Metricon Stadium, the second of the doubleheaders. Sharp and Lemons come in for the Gold Coast, McPherson and Hanley left out. Long and Kent in for the Saints, Parker and Savage on the outskier there. It's a King Fest, Ben and Max taken on each other. It's the first time they're playing against each other.
This is going to be great, isn't it? It's going to be really good. It's going to be really good. And you look at the last three games against these teams, it was St Kilda by 4 points, St Kilda by 1 point, and St Kilda by 2 points. So we could be in for a bit of a battle here, which is good. I've got the game tonight, so I'm really looking forward to it. And I think Jeremy Sharp's one player that Gold Coast have brought in. He'll play on the wing. He's a pretty sharp sort of player, pretty smart sort of player as well. So wish him sort of all the best as he makes his debut for the Gold Coast Suns. But overall, I think this is a big test for Gold Coast in terms of trying to continue that momentum that we've seen from them this year. They started the season so well. They've dropped off in terms of wins and losses over the last 3 or 4 weeks. So they need to get back and going to that pressurised football. And it seems since Matty Rowell has gone out of that side in their first-year player that it's had a bit of an effect on them as a group in the way that they play and the pressure that they bring, especially around the contest. So they've got to step up, Gold Coast, and it's a big test against a team that are in pretty good form and that are looking to make some huge steps forward this year in St Kilda. They're coached really well under Brett Ratten. He plays an exciting brand of footy. So it's going to be a great game of footy. I think it'll be pretty fast-paced. I think there'll be some good pressure around, which we'll love to see, and who can handle that the best. And we wait to see which one of the King Twins has the biggest impact on the game. It's going to be exciting to watch.
So backing up Jono's comment, Half, Gold Coast have lost their last 5 matches, so they haven't won since they beat Fremantle at home in round 4, but they haven't been blown away in any of those 5 losses. Mm. They've been in most of those games for large portions of the match, so they've clearly lost their momentum and whatever else, but I think, Half, we were talking about this earlier in the week. There's a bit more to them this year. They're not getting whacked in any of those games. They're staying in the contest. And, St Kilda would want to be on their best behaviour tonight if they're to win, I reckon.
St Kilda win tonight, they go to second.
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it? It's great.
Who would have thought that?
Half. And it really is a credit to, Brett Ratten and bringing this group together so quickly and having... He's just, I think he coaches really, really well and sets them up and allows the players to play in the positions that they really thrive in and understand the most. And I think that's and he really structures them up in a really positive fashion to allow really good freedom with their ball movement and get into some positions that these guys can compete really well. So it's exciting. They're an exciting team to watch, and I think we're all buoyed by the fact that Brett Ratner's got them ticking along really well.
It's going to be a good game tonight, second of the doubleheader. Who wins both of them, Jono? Who wins both games tonight?
Pies and I'm going for Gold Coast to win this, although my tipping this round hasn't been great. But I am I'm tipping Gold Coast to get back on the winners list in this one.
There you go. Gold Coast to win, to defeat the Saints tonight and the Magpies as well as part of our Thursday night preview. I'll be going for Collingwood and the Saints, Whitey, just for reference.
Yeah, I'm the same.
Are you
going to
put your tips in a quarter time half again, or are you going to wait to get them in before the game starts tonight?
No, I'll probably get there at quarter time. We'll see how that goes. Now, before that you go, Jono, there's a question off the SMS. Would I be better to go to Brash's or Sanity to get a copy of your daughter's CD? That's from Juppy in Bendigo.
Oh, yes, Juppy. Brash's, yeah, that's a flash in the past, isn't it? Yeah, my daughter has just released her latest single. It's called Woman Ooh La La. And it's going quite well, which is great. So if you get a chance, have a listen, download it on Spotify and give us some likes. She's really enjoying the opportunity at the moment to produce some music.
Good on her. Ella J is her name. You can track her down on Spotify and find out whether or not you're into her style of music. Woman Ooh La La, the latest single from Ella J. John, always great to chat to you, mate. Enjoy the footy tonight. We'll chat soon.
Good on you, Half. Good on you, Whitey. Enjoy.